weeks now. I've been feeling it since
you're listening to Walker and Rintoul on Sportsnet 650.
Welcome back. The program Walker Rintoul, your new home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. The pregame show is coming up at 6. Rangers in town. What's left of the Rangers in town to play the Vancouver Canucks? And we have NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman joining us for the next little while in studio. Welcome to Sportsnet 650 and welcome to rainy Vancouver.
Well, that, isn't that redundant?
Mm-hmm.
Yep, no, it's always great to be here. And the weather always cooperates. It's what I expect.
Well, and Vancouver's very happy with the way the NHL cooperated in bringing the draft here today. What's the reaction been like since you've been in town?
It's been great. I mean, this is a great hockey town. Always has been. The fans are passionate. They're knowledgeable. They love the Canucks. And frankly, to bring a major event here again, this is the third time the draft will have been here. This is a great, you know, kidding around about the rain, putting that aside. June, July, August, beautiful here. And I think our NHL family, the prospects, their families, guests, hockey fans from all over are going to be thrilled to come here.
We talked a lot about the variety of market that the draft has gone to in the last 30 years or so. How do you decide who gets it?
It's very competitive because as the quality, the size, the nature of our events has expanded, whether it's an outdoor game or an award show or the draft, there's competition for it. And when we're focused on a particular year, we tell the clubs, if you're interested, let us know. And the Canucks put in a great proposal, particularly since it's going to be the 50th anniversary year of the club. We thought, what better way to help that celebration than to come here? The bid on its own was compelling. We know the World Juniors are going to be here. 50 years is going to be a great year for hockey in Vancouver.
We were just in, we had a lot of things to talk to you about, but we were just in Vegas, as we were talking about during the break. And it, I don't know, and you kind of smiled when we told you, I don't know if we were quite ready for it. And I imagine you get that response every time somebody goes down there.
I get skeptical responses every time I make a decision. So that's no surprise. No, we went through a very thorough vetting process, and you don't expand because you want to just have a symmetrical number or try and balance out the East and the West. You don't expand just because of the money, because it's self-liquidating, because you wind up, when you add a new team, dividing revenues more ways. You expand if you think it's a good opportunity to connect with fans in a market, that you have a state-of-the-art building, a good market that will support the team, a great owner, and perhaps as importantly, is it an opportunity to make the game of hockey, the league, even stronger? And in the case of Las Vegas, that's a city that has worldwide visibility. But when we looked and evaluated all the criteria, and we spent a long time going through the process, people kept saying, what's taking so long? We wanted to do it the right way. We were not only comfortable, we were confident that this team would be successful. Now, did we predict or could have predicted that the team would be as good on the ice as it is? No. We knew we were going to make them stronger than any expansion team because with the salary cap, all teams can afford to be competitive, and you want your newest addition to be able to at least be competitive. We wanted the team to be able to be playing meaningful games into March or beyond, not be out of it, which is typical for an expansion team, by Thanksgiving, either Canadian or U.S. And so that was part of the plan. And for a whole host of reasons, I think this team has been tremendously successful. Yes, George McPhee did a great job. The coaching is terrific for the style of play. But I also think the players have come to Las Vegas with a purpose to show the teams that they left. Maybe they made a mistake. And then as we talked about in the break, the team starting in the face of a terrible tragedy, I think there's something else going on with the city and the team in terms of unity and healing and a sense of purpose.
Like it was a different time, but like what were the differences? You look at Atlanta and how it could never really get going, and Vegas is just a different world. I mean, was the process different? Did you look at different things?
First of all, it was a different time, and Atlanta's an interesting market, and there are some who said that for hockey, the building was in the wrong place. And if it was where the new baseball stadium is, and they moved the baseball stadium from downtown, because they have a lot of traffic there and it's tough to get around. There's a sense of saying that the team would have been successful, but circumstances dictated it. Also, ownership, if I remember correctly at the time, was having challenges both with the basketball team and the hockey team, and the only team of the two that was portable was the hockey team, because the basketball team was somehow tied to the bonds on the arena. So, you know, circumstances were vastly different. But if you look at Nashville and you look at Minnesota and you look at Columbus, all out of that same expansion, those teams have been tremendously successful.
He is the commissioner of the National Hockey League, Gary Bettman, on the program with Walker and Rintoul, Sportsnet 650. Hockey's a game of paying your dues, as we've heard time and time again with the young players here in Vancouver this year. So with Vegas having instant success, I imagine there's some envy around the National Hockey League. What type of feedback do you get from competing franchises about their instant success in the NHL?
The single word that I can use is amazement. I haven't gotten too much in the form of sour grapes. I think people are amazed, both in terms of front offices and fans, at what they've been able to accomplish. And as I said, we wanted and we made the rules so that the team could be more competitive than a typical expansion team. But Bill Foley put together a great organization, starting with George McPhee as general manager. They did an incredible job. But again, I think that there's something special going on there that's unique out of tragic circumstances.
You must have had a little bit of sour grape type pushback.
No.
Not at all?
No.
Because like even talking to fans, and Vancouver is one of those markets, right? 50 years and no Stanley Cups and some close ones, and winning is hard and rebuilding is hard, and we've seen franchises get stuck in this, and all of a sudden Vegas is, they're just good. They're just, and it's not lucky, they're just good.
But we have, if you look at it, we have extraordinary competitive balance. You look at the regular season races, teams are going to make or miss the playoffs by a point or two. You have a number of teams, you know, a point or two apart going for first place in their division. You've got lots of teams on the bubble in terms of the wild card. And then once the playoffs begin, anything can happen. And so it's important that you build and rebuild the right way. And I know that's what Trevor Linden and Jim Benning are committed to doing. And it's now about speed and skill. And teams will go through cycles, but, you know, this has been an extraordinary event.
Seattle starts its ticket drive tomorrow in its expansion process. What are the markers we look for along the way in this roadmap from them making this dream a reality down the road?
Well, we're going to go through the due diligence that we need to do with ownership, with the arena, with the market, the same things we did in Las Vegas, and the season ticket drive will speak for itself. You know, if they, you know, sell out tons and tons of tickets like Las Vegas did, that's a marker that tells you it's going to be successful. If the season ticket drive stalls, then that'll tell us something else. Although everything I'm hearing is not only are they optimistic, they're incredibly excited at the response they're getting. And again, I'm not surprised, because the Pacific Northwest has a great interest in hockey, great fans at all levels of the game. Seattle has a tradition at other levels of having hockey. And frankly, the possibility of a geographic rivalry with Vancouver, I think, is a check mark in the right column as that goes. So that goes to one of the factors, is will it make the league stronger? Yes, we have a lot of other factors to consider, but the geography is a real plus. And while we wouldn't expand to round out to 32, that will help in the West as well.
The ticket drive is going to work, obviously. It probably would have anyway, but with Vegas' success, I mean, it just sets this precedent. Why wouldn't a market want to add that? Although then we're into the question of expectations, and this is a day-to-day. Would the process of not dispersal, but expansion and the players, would you anticipate it staying exactly the same?
It'll be the same rules. Yeah. I don't think at this stage the people in Seattle would want or accept anything less. It would only be fair, and as has been reported, the expansion price is going to be more than it was in Las Vegas. So any notion that we would do less, or they, people in Seattle, particularly the prospective owners, would accept less, is not realistic.
GMs are crafty guys, and
I've noticed
some of them, and they'll learn from their mistakes, or perceived mistakes maybe, that they made with this Vegas team. They gave them some pretty good players. Will you have to monitor, you know, we call it creativity sometimes, and other times executives say, I can't believe the NHL allowed that.
Well, we scrutinize every transaction, and, you know, we don't tolerate our rules being circumvented. But sometimes when you look at what's going on, you could be in a gray area, or with appropriate explanation, you're not even in a gray area. It's crystal clear one way or the other. And, you know, when you're focused on either by fans or by media, and I don't say this is negative, if you have a rooting interest, you'll have a different take on our analysis. We have nothing but transparency, and we don't have a rooting interest. Our job is to enforce the rules as fairly as possible, but sometimes things are just not crystal clear, and we have to deal with that.
Big part of your job, as you just mentioned, strengthening the league, strengthening the game. The Olympics provide an opportunity of sorts for the league, and I heard your comments earlier today and last week, of course. You said, look, I'm not sure we want to go to China in 2022, which everybody thought was a foregone conclusion. How do you balance the disruption of your season and your league season with the opportunity to go to a market like China and expose the game to a global audience?
Well, first of all, we I don't think missed the beat by not being at these Olympics. Ratings seem to be down across the board, particularly in hockey, because we weren't there. The time zones were kind of crazy for giving up almost 3 weeks of our regular exposure. We've had great games over the last couple of weeks. We had the trade deadline. We've had a lot of excitement, momentum building, teams on streaks. All of that would have disappeared had we taken a break. But what's also important to keep in mind, based on the fact that our players come from so many different countries, some NHL teams would send maybe 10 players and some would send one or two. And that coming back from the break, teams would be in widely disparate conditions from when they left, including some teams more banged up and tired and other teams completely rested from a couple of weeks on the beach. So it is clearly disruptive, and for these Olympics, we didn't miss a beat. There was hockey. It was not best on best, but at points entertaining, including the gold medal game. It probably grew the game in Germany, even though it, and more so than I think if we were there. You know what? We're going to China with preseason games again. We just had them with Vancouver this year, and we're working with the Chinese to build the game of hockey. Whether or not we go to the Olympics for 2 weeks isn't what's going to make or break it. And having had five previous experiences of going to the Olympics, we learned it doesn't do much for us internationally. And I'm not talking about money. This has never been about money. This has been about the disruption to our season and how you promote the game. And the IOC, International Olympic Committee, doesn't let us promote the fact that we're there. We don't have the footage of Sidney Crosby scoring the overtime goal here in Vancouver for the gold medal. We've asked for the opportunity to promote the fact that we're the official supplier of players to the hockey tournament, and the answer's always been no. And so I'm very comfortable, as are the clubs, that we've made the right decision for us, and there's still hockey at the Olympics.
The argument, of course, has always been, look, the NHL is missing an opportunity to make this a global game, but there are certain parameters in hockey that maybe...
We are a global game, and there was hockey played at the Olympics, and everybody knows that the best hockey in the world is played in the NHL, and so as long as they're playing hockey at the Olympics, we don't lose that opportunity. And as I said, having a tournament that's not best on best gave a country like Germany an opportunity to almost win the gold medal, and I think that'll help hockey grow there. But again, we've had the experience of five Olympics, and it's way more disruptive than any possible benefit. I know people say, oh, go to the Olympics, biggest platform. It does nothing for us, particularly when we're shut down for 3 weeks. It breaks up the season, and when you're halfway around the world and games are coming back at the middle of the night, what is it doing to build the game? Nothing.
Gary Bettman joins us in studio, Sportsnet 650, Walker and Rintoul, the program. I can't argue on the time change. It was a tough watch. And I don't know if our country in particular, if we would have showed up en masse at 4 a.m., 3 a.m. for NHLers. I'm not sure. But when you weigh the options of going or not going, on the side of going, where do you feel the most pressure? Is it because your players want to go?
By the way, our players want to go, but our players are passionate about playing NHL hockey, which they do, and are compensated for doing it. And how many businesses shut down in the middle of their busiest season? I was on a paddle with Adam Silver, a couple of years ago, and I said, would the NBA shut down in the middle of the season if they couldn't go in the summer? And before I could finish the question, he said, absolutely not. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. By the way, here in Vancouver, the time zones were better than they were on the East Coast, because I watched the gold medal game at 11 o'clock at night till 2 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Here it was on at 8 o'clock until 11, right? That was the gold medal game.
That is correct.
And by the way, when Canada and the U.S. are not in the gold medal game, the interest plummets. And I know that there are people saying, because Canadians love the game so much, we would have won the gold medal. Maybe, maybe not. I mean, there was Torino and there was Nagano. I mean, just because we have best on best doesn't assure any one country the fact that they may win or not win.
Scott had mentioned today playing in the summer, and I know the World Cup was in Toronto a couple years ago, and it will be coming back. Would the Summer Olympics be a better option? Is that even possible?
The answer is, in terms of the logistics from our standpoint, it would be a better option,
right?
And I assume that we would do that if given the opportunity. I've only asked the IOC this countless times over the last 20 or so years. The flip side to it is there are a lot more events in the summer, so maybe it doesn't have the same presence. But that's also the reason that I think they would never let us go to the summer, because in terms of hours of programming and number of events and tickets sold, hockey's probably the most important thing, men's hockey in particular, in the Winter Olympics. So I don't think, and I've asked it, and the answer has consistently been no, they're not going to do that. Just for history buffs, the first time hockey was in the Olympics was in Antwerp in 1920 in the summer.
Now, when you get in a room with the IIHF and the IOC, how do you characterize those discussions? Are they fairly pleasant? Are they contentious? How do they go?
No, I'm generally never in contentious discussions, despite reports to the contrary. You know what? It's a long life, a small world. People treat with each other with respect. Candor doesn't mean contention. The fact of the matter is they have their view of things. We have our view of things. And the best thing we can do is respectfully express our views to each other. Doesn't mean you can always agree on things. Sometimes you have to agree to disagree.
Well, it's interesting you bring that up, because as you saw at the press conference today and heard at the press conference today, there's been a lot of talk about negativity in this market over the last 24 hours. Do you ever worry about that with any of your markets, the way the game's covered?
The negativity or the positivity, depending on where you are in a cycle, is an indication of how passionate people are about the game. And that's never a bad thing, even if it means I get booed. Okay? It's part of it, but that's okay. It means people care. And that's great.
Has that ever bothered you, the booing?
No.
And I know that it gets brought up a lot, but has it ever bothered you at any point along the way?
No, I get it. And frankly, if everybody who comes up to me afterwards and says, oh, I didn't boo you, I'm sorry people booed you, if that were true for everybody who did it, there wouldn't have been any booing. It's fine. You know what? If I walk out there and it's silent, I'll probably be more concerned.
Real Sports last night had a segment on, or a show on concussions and concussion research and the NHL's role in it. Eric Lindros, Ken Dryden, both outspoken. Steve Montador's dad. Sitting here today, your reaction you know, to where we are.
There was nothing new in that. It really didn't paint the full and accurate picture. But with litigation pending, it's not something we discuss or debate publicly. I wasn't impressed by it at all.
You're right that hockey is not football. You know, we know that, and I don't know if we have an epidemic. I've never thought that. And at the same time, are we on the forefront of helping with research?
Well, we're on the forefront of trying to make the game as safe as possible, and that's something we do on a continuous basis. And I think there was a noted lack of coverage of all the things that, in fact, we have been doing to make the game safer and to make sure, consistent with advances in medicine, that we're treating concussions, we're identifying them better, and treating them better. You know, we were the first sports league to form a working study group with our players and our doctors and trainers. We were the first sports league to have baseline testing. We were the first sports leagues to have a protocol for diagnosis and return to play decisions. We've changed the rules. We've changed the playing environment. We've changed the equipment. We have a Department of Player Safety, which nobody has ever had before. I mean, we do lots. And all of that was conspicuously absent. And that's okay, because that's the way it's been covered. Because, again, we're not going to get into a debate over CTE or what we have or haven't done. The fact is, unfortunately, it's subject to litigation, and we're dealing with it.
Does it concern you from an enrollment standpoint?
Hockey registrations, I know off the top of my head, are record highs in the United States, and I believe they're in good shape, if not comparable, in Canada as well.
He's the commissioner of the National Hockey League, Gary Bettman, joining us here. It's the program with Walker and Rintoul.
We had talked to you right before the start of the season, and we had talked a little bit about David Stern, who you've described as mentor. I think that was maybe the word.
It's a good one.
He had expressed his biggest regret was teams in the Pacific Northwest, namely Seattle and Vancouver, how they just didn't work and whatever, and they're not in these markets that could probably sustain them now. Do you have any in your 25 years? Is there a do-over? Is there, because people learn along the way, is there something that you would have liked to go differently?
In terms of franchises?
It could be anything. Could be a misstep by you, the office, by anything.
I hated the toe in the crease rule.
Yeah, that was so weird.
Right? That was a mistake to enact that. My instinct at the time was it was a mistake, but I deferred to some others, and we wound up having to repeal that rule. I mean, that comes to mind. I mean, listen, nobody gets every single decision right. In baseball, you get into the Hall of Fame if you bat 300. Now, obviously, we have to do better than that. But in the course of time, you know, you do the best you can. You make the best judgments you can. You do your homework. You work hard. And you try and make decisions for the right reasons.
Well, you mentioned the toe in the crease. Where do you feel we're at with the offsides and the goaltender interference, well, which have obviously been controversial?
The offsides, the rule itself may need an adjustment, but by going to the 2-minute penalty for a bad call, we virtually reduced in half the number of coaches' challenges, and that's been good. The people get a little unhappy. Well, it was a half an inch. It's a debate I have with Trevor Linden all the time. The fact of the matter is the rule's the rule, and maybe breaking the plane makes sense as the rule, but you got to be careful, because it needs to be in the context of an ordinary skating stride. Because, for example, and I'll try and give you a good visual of this, if somebody's barreling in and they think they're going to be offside and you just have to worry about breaking the plane, you got to worry about somebody like a ice dancer or a ballerina sticking their leg straight out, because you don't want somebody else skating into the skate and getting cut, because we've seen some bad cuts on the ice. So we'll take a look at it with the general managers in March. Goaltender interference, the whole problem, if it is a problem, and I put it in quotes, is a little bit self-inflicted, because when coaches say, I don't know what goaltender interference is anymore, goaltender interference, we haven't changed the rule. It's the same rule that it's been for the last, since actually we got rid of the in-the-crease rule. And, you know, if you're a coach and you make the challenge and you lose, you got to blame something. Okay. What it was intended to do was look at the egregious case. Goaltender interference gets called, and the goalie was never touched. Not was it incidental contact and how much, but he was never touched. Or contrary, he was touched badly, and the officials didn't see it. That's really what it was intended to do, and I think it's getting used a little too much in circumstances where it shouldn't. It should just be the egregious cases. We may be overthinking the video review of it in the coach's challenge, and I think conceptually it works right. It needs to be refined, just like perhaps refining slightly the offside rule.
You mentioned the word challenge. One last one for you here. You're a busy man. You got a lot of things to do. What is your biggest challenge as commissioner right now?
Well, there's never one thing. We, as you said, we do lots of things. You have to multitask. I don't view it as challenges. I view it as opportunities. We're having a great season. The races, our competitive balance, the skill of our players is spectacular. I'm looking forward to the stretch run in the playoffs. We've got great opportunities internationally. We have great opportunities using social media and all the digital platforms. We're finding more and more ways to connect with our fans and bring more and more of the game to our fans. So I think it's all good in terms of what the future holds.
Well, at the very least, we will see you back in our city 2019, probably before then, as the NHL draft comes here. Congratulations on that announcement today. I know you guys have used a firm lately for the lottery. If you do go back to envelopes, we'll give you like a cold one because this city needs it. This city needs it coming up in a few months.
You know, it's funny because people talk about tanking. I've never believed our clubs do. It's perception. So we create a system where there's absolutely no incentive to tank, and then people complain about that. The fact of the matter is, if you look at it,
people like to complain. I'm not sure if you've noticed.
No, I did. And it's okay, because as I said, that reflects an interest and a passion in the game. But if you look at it overall, the teams that don't make the playoffs, they're not that far apart competitively. And so having a system that takes away the perception that any team would do other than play its best is a good system.
Canucks fans, we're just fine with the system if the number one pick is the Vancouver Canucks this year.
How about how well Vancouver did last year with its draft pick?
It's looking pretty good right now, but number one would feel even better.
Not necessarily, right? You don't know.
And just make sure you have that like that bunker under the offices if Edmonton wins. Just get ready for it, because I don't know what's going to happen.
You're right, though. Vancouver doesn't know because it's never had the number one pick. It's time.
Hey, we appreciate you swinging by. We appreciate the time.
It's great to be with you guys.
Thank you very much.
Gary Bettman, NHL commissioner, on with us. Walker Rintoul, the program.
Sportsnet 650.